This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Michigan Campaign Finance Network Director Rich Robinson on the latest changes to the state's campaign finance laws. But first, Governor Rick Snyder has released nearly 300 pages of emails that he sent and received regarding the drinking water crisis in Flint. People who have thoroughly reviewed those emails say there are few surprises. Common Cause of Michigan is one of the groups that has been urging a complete release of emails related to the Flint water crisis. Melanie McElroy is Executive Director of Common Cause of Michigan. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
What do we know today that we did not know at this time yesterday when the emails had not been released or at least had not been read by too many people?
Well, I'd like to start by saying that what Common Cause has been calling for is a full release of any and all documents. As you know, the governor's office in Michigan is exempt from FOIA, from the Freedom of Information Act, and that's something that 48 other states don't have. So in any other case, people would have been able to, months ago, demand any of this information leading up to the federal investigation and others from the governor's office. So what we saw this week after the State of the State address was an answer to our call in that the governor did release some documents via email, but this is still not the same thing as open transparency. I mean, transparency means that all documents are available to people because folks have a right to know. Their children were poisoned with lead. They've got a right to know what he knew, when he knew it, and that should be a full and open gamut of documents, not just a couple of emails when he wants to share them and selectively.
Well, give us an idea. What else do you think should be available to the public for them to review?
Any documents related to the city manager, the conversations that were had with him, with any other legislators or state officials that were involved. There just seems to be a lot of loopholes here, and there shouldn't have been this much time between when we received these emails yesterday and we knew the problem was happening.
Are there certain questions you think could be answered better or maybe at all if we did have a complete review of documents, for instance, emails which were shared with other people, not just the governor, but other members of his staff?
I think the key point here is other members of his staff. I don't think that the governor is necessarily on every email thread related to these types of issues in his office. I think that investigating emails and other documents from key staff members is really important. I also, as we saw in the State of the State address, the governor was very quick to say that the decision to leave the Detroit water system and move to Flint was made by city council, and it was approved by the mayor and then finally the city manager. So there's a shift in responsibility that he's clearly trying to make here, and folks on the ground don't seem to be buying it. And so that's where I think we really need to find out more of what happened.
Let me read to you a quote from the governor yesterday when he was on WDET in Detroit. This is regarding releasing the other emails that he was not in on. One of the things that I had to think through is they also sort of had the perspective that they were under that umbrella and shield personally themselves because they were part of the executive office. That's what Mr. Snyder told WDET-FM's Detroit Today. If you go back to this discussion, it was mostly a discussion of me as the elected official. Is there some smoking gun or some other issue to indicate that I knew about the lead problem and I didn't do something about it? What is your response to the governor's statement there? They're basically saying these other people didn't consider the possibility that it might be shared.
I think that's perfectly logical on his end, but that's not enough for the families of Flint. I mean, we need to know who knew what so that we can hold someone accountable. It's true that the governor is the elected body here, but we also have to remember that the citizens of Michigan voted against an emergency manager law, and there was still one placed anyway in Flint, and that emergency manager was there to override the elected officials that people appointed for or elected, I'm sorry, in their own city. So now the issue is that you're removing the power from elected bodies, and he, as a representative of the emergency manager, is the only person that we could legally hold accountable. But I think that opening up any discussions within his staff is going to be really key in this investigation.
More broadly, you mentioned that Michigan is rare in the fact that the Freedom of Information Act does not apply to the governor's office or the state legislature. If we're looking at Michigan compared to other states on, you know, a metric of government transparency, how do we measure up?
I mean, the Center for Public Integrity rated us dead last. We got an F score in 2015 on measures of corruption, of government accountability and transparency. But we have a long way to go. There are many, many anti-corruption and accountability reforms that could be passed in Michigan. And this is anywhere from disclosure, from campaign finance to ethics, revolving door. There's just a long way to go here. And I think that this is a stark example of why Michigan needs to pay closer attention to these types of rules.
So if there's a long way to go and many things that could be done, why don't you maybe give us your top three or four things that you would like to see Michigan enact to make government more transparent?
In this specific case, we need FOIA reform. The Freedom of Information Act should be applied to the governor's office, to our legislature. Like I mentioned, 48 other states already do that. More broadly, there are anti-corruption measures. Like a cooling off period, we saw the governor's chief of staff leave his office this last week to come work here in Detroit for a major law firm as their lobbyist. In many states, there are cooling off periods where you need to wait a year or longer before you would be able to do that. Campaign finance reform is huge. Polling across the state says that people in Michigan believe there's too much money in politics and that that has a corrupting influence on our elected officials and on decisions that are being made. So there are many measures that can be taken to curb that and make sure that people's voices are heard. Most importantly, always for me, are voting monetization rules. There's lots we can do to make voting more accessible so that people can get out and let elected officials know what they think.
Just to go back to the idea of a cooling off period for a moment, would that apply to state lawmakers, members of the executive branch? I mean, who might fall under some sort of a law that says you've got to wait so long before you start lobbying?
There is currently no law. So in Michigan, we could get creative. I think that that would start with lawmakers. But I think that it's often overlooked and very important to look at these top officials in lawmakers' offices, their chiefs of staff. These are people who are being lobbied without disclosure. That's another area where Michigan has a long way to go. I think a lot more could be done to disclose what happens with lobbyists and their spending and all of that. But looking at people in these elected officials' office, I think, is going to be really important moving forward.
You mentioned that there is polling that shows that people think that there's too much money in politics. They would like to do something to limit that. But when it comes to election time, do you find that people weigh those sort of issues prominently, or do they tend to fly under the radar compared to things like economy, taxes, et cetera?
Unfortunately, money in politics might not be one of those kitchen table issues like schools, like jobs. But it's something that I think definitely our members and other people we talk to across the state are starting to connect the dots and realize that some decisions that seem unfair that might be getting made, that just lack of collaboration in Lansing and in Washington, that's all a common thread in unfair elections, whether it's our representation through redistricting, lack of access to the ballot, or unfair election spending by these large corporate entities that's drowning out the voices of Michigan voters.
I suppose some people might wonder, if we had a more transparent government, would something like the Flint water crisis be less likely to happen? Or does a more transparent government just allow us to look back and figure out why it happened and who is the person that should be held responsible?
Transparency, I think, helps us in this reactionary mode that we found ourselves in right now with the Flint crisis. I think what would have prevented problems like this is spending an infrastructure, an open dialogue about necessary reform to things like our pipes, our bridges, our roads here in Michigan. There are many factors, I think, that contributed to this particular crisis. I think it's very important that we recognize this as a man-made crisis. We heard Governor Snyder compare this to George Bush's reaction to Katrina. He calls this his Katrina because of a delayed reaction in bringing aid to these communities. I don't think those are comparable. This was something that was a man-made decision, and people are suffering because of that. But I think that in this case, definitely transparency is one small shred of comfort we can bring families in figuring out how to get to the bottom of this.
Just to clarify, what I think the governor was saying was that his own delayed response is comparable to George W. Bush's delayed response to Katrina. I mean, I think that was the point he was making. It sounds like a self-critical point to me.
And I appreciate that. But I think that George Bush had no idea that this hurricane was going to land and do the damage that it did. But there are many steps that Snyder's office could have taken to recognize this problem much sooner than these last couple of months.
What does Common Cause plan to do going forward? Are there things the steps that your organization plans to take to try to raise awareness, get people more interested in what we might call issues of good government?
Absolutely. Just over the last week, we started circulating this petition calling for the governor to release more documents and bringing attention to reforming the Freedom of Information Act. And that petition got very quickly received 40,000 signatures, which is one of the greatest petitions that we've had in our history. So that's very impressive that this seems to be a topic that folks are really excited to get involved in. So that's one. As always, we're looking for any legislation that there was a package introduced last year, but bringing that back to the forefront of government reforms in disclosure and transparency, money in politics, and voting reforms and beyond. So we are looking for lawmakers on any side of the aisle to help push for these reforms, because not only are they very necessary, but citizens across the state are really eager to see some of this stuff move.
Well, if citizens are eager to see it move, and if state lawmakers and perhaps the governor or future governors are reluctant to change the rules under which they've been living for so long, is it possible that a ballot campaign makes sense to try and change how Michigan's sunshine laws work?
We do have that option here in Michigan, and I would say that all options are on the table. That's something that we always hear a murmur of when we travel across the state and talk to our members. People want to have their voices heard on this issue, and if that's the only way, it's possible that people could come together and try to get something on the ballot. There's no current plan for that underway that I know of, but that's something that we would support.
As we go forward here and perhaps learn some more about what was happening before the public found out about the water crisis in Flint, what do you think are the main lessons that state officials as well as the citizens of Michigan should be trying to learn from what has happened?
I think we need to look at other cities in Michigan that have had emergency managers or are currently under emergency management. The job of those officials is to go in and try to cut costs, balance books, get these cities back on track. I don't think they have ill intentions, but this whole scandal is a result of cutting corners that ended up with huge consequences. So I think the more we can open up these emergency management processes to public scrutiny, the more we'll be able to check and balance those types of changes like we saw in Flint. We've got emergency managers in school systems across the state. We've got a lot going on that's happening sort of below the elected official radar, and that's why it's really important to open a lot of this up, make documents available online, make meetings open so that we can keep an eye on what's happening. I think everyone wants to cut spending. Well, everybody wants to cut, balance our budgets and get our cities back on track. No one likes to have deficits or holes in the books, but we want to make sure that we're not doing that at the expense of people's health.
Melanie McElroy, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Melanie McElroy is Executive Director of Common Cause of Michigan. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Governor Rick Snyder signed legislation earlier this month which includes a prohibition on local leaders using taxpayer resources to share factual information about ballot issues. That got attention from lawmakers, local government officials, and media organizations. But that legislation also includes other changes to campaign finance law. We're going to discuss some of them with Rich Robinson. He's been attempting to track how money is raised and spent in Michigan for the past 15 years with the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. Rich Robinson, thanks for being with us again.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
Let's get to the whole issue of what local government officials can say about ballot issues in a moment. But first of all, I want to note what Detroit Free Press columnist Brian Dickerson said about this campaign finance bill, calling it a victory for big donors. Is that accurate? And how is it the case that it's a victory for big donors, if so?
It is a victory for big donors. Here we are, 2 years after contributions to candidate committees were doubled. In Public Act 252 of 2013. And now in a provision of this bill that I would call the Andy Dillon provision, because Andy Dillon had incurred a debt in his 2010 gubernatorial primary campaign that he sought to fill by a second contribution from a committee that had already given him the maximum amount. That attempt was disallowed by the Department of State, and so what we have here is the legislature acting to enshrine that tactic into law. Here's what's wrong with it. It would be extremely easy for a candidate to make a bookkeeping entry that said, I have loaned my campaign $100,000, and there's a debt there. And they could get contributions before or after an election. If they're before, they can simply backdate them and, in effect, allow a campaign or a committee to contribute to the candidate, doubling again. So this is an open invitation to corruption. It's terrible public policy. And this particular provision of this bill never was discussed in a public hearing. This was introduced as a substitute to the bill on the floor of the legislature the last day that they met on 2015, late at night. This is classic, terrible legislating.
The Michigan campaign finance system is one that you have often described as being one of the worst in the country. Does this provision make it even worse than it was?
It does certainly make it worse than it was. I think it invites people to engage in fraudulent bookkeeping in order to bring more money into a campaign if they feel like more money is what they need to win an election. And again, the process of having done this is just counter to everything that should be there as far as transparency and accountability in government.
You mentioned fraudulent bookkeeping. Is there a good way of auditing and finding out if someone is, in fact, being completely honest with their books, or is that also tough to do in Michigan?
Well, it's impossible to do in Michigan because there's nothing in law that would require it. A good approach would be to say that every election cycle, some number of campaign committees are going to be audited, including bank statements and all the rest that verifies what's going on. And I think that if candidates and interest groups, political action committees knew that there was a potential that they would be the number that came up in a random draw, that would be a much greater incentive to them to hew to the straight and narrow and be more accurate and honest about their campaign finance bookkeeping.
There is also a prohibition on collecting contributions from an employee for a union's political action committee. Is this tipping the balance more towards corporate interests than union interests?
Well, it is, and I think more specifically, it's tipping the balance toward Republican interest as opposed to Democratic interest. I think there's a strong belief that the funding base of the Democratic Party is through unions, and if we can only defund the unions, then the Democratic Party will fold and the Republican Party will win ultimate victories. I think you see that in the whole right-to-work movement, in the attack on prevailing wages. Anything that can be done to try to knock down unions is part of a large part of the Republican legislative agenda. I think if the majority party in the legislature would devote more time to the health, education, and general welfare needs of the citizens of this state rather than playing these spy versus spy political games, all of us would be a whole lot better off.
The governor, when he signed the legislation, called for what he said should be a fix to this part of the bill, which puts a prohibition on local government officials putting out information about ballot issues. Do you see any signs that there's going to be a fix that addresses that problem and does allow at least the very basics, factual information, to be disseminated to the voters before we cast our ballots on a tax increase, a millage increase, that sort of thing?
Well, as we talk on the morning of January 20th, there is a bill that it purports to be cleanup of this Senate Bill 571. What it will do is essentially acknowledge that the Michigan legislature didn't have the prerogative to repeal the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, and public officials can speak to the fact that there are millage questions. But this still prohibits educational initiatives on the part of public corporations, libraries, school systems, municipal governments, and the like, to say why it is that they need to propose a millage question. And I find a real irony in this, in that Governor Snyder announced last night that he was going to be having a public infrastructure commission to look at the long overdue repairs to our state's infrastructure. How does he expect that local governments who have to pay for that or pay for those infrastructure improvements will be able to educate their public in order to understand why it is they're being asked to pay a millage for this kind of action? In effect, when there's no capability on the part of the public body to educate the public on why they need a millage initiative, the default position of the voter is going to be no if they don't understand why millage is required. And in this bill that Governor Snyder signed and asked the legislature to fix essentially makes his proposal for a report from this infrastructure commission a dead letter. It's not going to be implemented if local governments aren't able to educate their citizens on why a millage is necessary.
And you're saying that a lot of the proposals would be at the local level, in other words, that it would be cities, counties, that sort of thing, which would put this sort of proposal on the ballot if there's going to be any sort of big infrastructure improvement.
I think virtually anything. I mean, we saw the legislature take a run at transportation infrastructure, and the tax increase they put on fuels is less than what the corner gas station is doing between Monday and Friday every week. And they have failed to raise enough revenue to address our transportation infrastructure deficiencies. When it comes to a lot of these other questions, whether it's libraries, whether it's police and fire operations, that's left to local governments. And in fact, what the state has given them is diminished revenue sharing, essentially reneging on a promise to share state sales and income tax with the local governments of this state in a way that allows them to be self-sufficient. So the bold tax cutters in Lansing have rolled the problem downhill to local governments, and now they don't want local governments to be effective in having a millage to correct the problem that's been handed to them.
Of course, Lansing has been preoccupied in large part for the past couple of weeks, and even before that, with the water crisis in Flint. Questions are really being raised about transparency there. The governor has said that he will share emails sent between 2014 and 2015 related to Flint. But I'm wondering, you know, groups like Common Cause are saying this is another indication of why we need the Freedom of Information Act and more sunshine laws related to the executive branch and the legislative branch in Michigan. Do you see this as part of the whole narrative surrounding the state, since you look specifically at campaign finance, of secrecy and the public not having a real good idea of how things are working?
Well, I think it is. I certainly think the governor is doing the right thing by releasing all his email messages on the whole question, the Flint water crisis. But I don't think things like we need to adjust and cherry pick the sampling we've done on lead presence was communicated to the governor directly. I think that was intradepartmental at the Department of Environmental Quality, and I think that's where a lot of this problem lies. But certainly transparency and accountability in government is appropriate. To me, this is yet another case, though, where an underfunded local government made a decision to go to a different water system, not the Flint River, but a new water system from Lake Huron. They were cut off by the Detroit water system, and in a penny wise and pound foolish move, chose to go to drawing water from the Flint River and not having the capability internally to manage that resource in a way that is appropriate, if it could have been managed appropriately. This is another problem of local governments not having sufficient funding to carry out providing for the basic health, education, and welfare of their citizens.
I want to note here before we come to the end that the Michigan Campaign Finance Network has named a new executive director, Craig Mauger. And so Rich Robinson is going to still be part of the organization as a member of their board. But Rich, we've had many of these conversations over the years. So before we sign this one off, let me kind of give you the floor here for a moment. If the state of Michigan were really going to have a campaign finance system that works, provides accountability, transparency, and yet recognizing the realities of what Supreme Court rulings have come down in the case of Citizens United and where the court would likely rule in the future, what would you say would be the best way for Michigan to go forward?
Well, I think it's important that all communications immediately preceding an election that are fundamentally about the qualifications of candidates for office ought to be treated as campaign expenditures and disclosed as such. The other major shortcoming we have is the absence of contribution limits to political action committees and to the political party committees, which allow a small number of very deep pockets to dominate the political scene in Michigan. There ought to be limits on what people can do in building up committees that have extreme influence in our electoral campaigns.
Rich, thank you very much for your time over the years and for doing your best to explain the ins and outs of campaign finance in Michigan.
Oh, thanks very much, Gordon. I appreciate the chance to talk with you as we have about all these issues. I think they're critically important for our democracy.
Rich Robinson is the former director of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.